This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, great friend, Jeff Legwald from ESPN.com, covers the Denver Broncos. And so, Leggy, looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. And, man, it's fun to see. But I guess going into this game, both Seattle and Denver have a lot of questions on their team that they got to find out what those answers are starting tomorrow.
Yeah, John, I mean, I think for the Broncos especially, you know, anytime you change your quarterback in offseason, that's always going to lead the way in terms of questions. But I think what's interesting about this team, watching them through the offseason, training camp, and the preseason, is athletically they're much better than they were last year. You know, will that translate into any wins? You know, we don't know yet, but athletically this is a very different team than the one the Broncos put on the field last year, and they've kind of just, you know, bet a lot of it on Case Keenum's 2017, you know, not being an outlier season. They think that's maybe the start of what he can do. So if they're right, I think they're in the playoff conversation. And if they're not right, then, you know, maybe they're trying to answer the same questions a year from now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing I find kind of fascinating. That's the two similarities, I think, between the Seahawks and the Denver Broncos is, you know, number one is that, you know, they're younger and faster, both teams, and both teams have added great athletes. And the other similarity, I think both teams had really good drafts.
Yeah, John, I mean, you're right. And I think, to me, that's how you can snap yourself out of it. I'm not sure you can buy your way out of trouble in free agency. I don't think that's been a good tactic for a lot of teams. You know, Broncos got 10 rookies on this roster. 8 of the 10 draft picks made it. And, you know, they made it legitimately. It wasn't like they were just deciding to go with youth. These guys won their spots and they're going to play plays that matter, especially on offense. The two rookie receivers, Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton, I don't think it will be too long before people are sort of looking at them saying they're important pieces of the offense. So I think they'd have a lot more questions if this group of rookies hadn't come through for them. But it was a mature group. They went out of their way to draft players that had been seniors, team captains. I mean, they kind of went old school with the draft class, and it paid off for them.
Yeah, what? Because it looks like there's a lot of young players on offense. One guy I'm kind of wondering about, because I went through this one research little project, and you know, I was looking at where's the cutoff for wide receivers, and it seems to be like the age of 31, unless you're a real top Hall of Fame caliber guy or just a real good one. And so where I look at Demaryius Thomas, he's still a real good one. So past the age of 31, he should be fine for a couple years. The guy that I wonder about is Emmanuel Sanders, because, you know, if that's the stage, does he just drop into being like a 45 to 55 catch guy with a little bit over 10 yards a catch?
You know, John, I think you may be onto something there, because of you know, the way they're constructed now, Emmanuel may find himself in the slot more than he has been. And that, you know, that'll be a little tougher go for him to get free. And a lot of Demaryius's looks and a lot of Emmanuel's looks are going to be going to the young guys. I mean, Cortland Sutton is going to catch passes. He's too much of a physical freak for Case Keenum not to throw him the ball. I mean, you know, I don't want to exaggerate or puff a guy too much, but Sutton was the guy people were coming out to see this summer. You know, every day he was making some kind of ridiculous one-handed catch, you know, and the people sitting in the grass would go crazy. So, you know, he's going to get the ball because Keenum trusts him already. And those catches are coming from somebody. And I think just the way the offense is constructed, I think Demaryius is going to have a bounce back year. And I think some of those targets are going to come from Emmanuel.
Yeah, and that's I kind of because you know you look. It was funny because when I was doing this, they all came out to be like the same numbers, and usually, and we watch this with our good buddy Larry Fitzgerald and others. It's like once you also get into your 31, 32 year old, you tend to move a little bit more to the slot.
Right, and once they move you inside, now you're in traffic, and it's just unless you're Welker in the heyday of the Patriots. Option route offense, you're going to have a hard time getting the kind of targets you did when you stuck outside a lot more. And again, this is going to be an offense that's going to be looking to pound the ball inside and then throw the ball outside the numbers. So, I think it's just combination personnel, age, and kind of the scheme that those targets some of them may go to other people.
Who does Royce Freeman remind you of as a running back?
Well, he doesn't have, the raw power you saw there for so long with Marshawn, but in his approach, and I don't mean, again, I'm not saying he's got that raw power. That's rare, but when he has the ball, he has very efficient movements to find the crease. He doesn't waste any movement. So in that regard, he kind of reminds me of Marshawn. But they haven't had a big back like this in quite some time. And I think they're pretty excited about it. This guy ran 4.5 before the draft. He's 230. So, this isn't the kind of player they've had for a long time here. So it's no surprise to me that he is the starter at running back.
I look at the defense and kind of scratch my head a little bit, but you go back to last year, it just didn't seem that the defense equaled the talent that was there. The performance level just didn't do. What happened to the defense?
Oh, you're right. You're right about that.
What happened?
That's a good question. I think they got a little comfortable, honestly. And I think even the players would say that. And the problem was, at outside linebacker, it was Vaughn and nobody else. So once Shane Ray got hurt last year, there was no reason, and the Broncos created no reason for offenses to block anybody else except Vaughn. So, often plays, especially on passing downs, looked like Vaughn wading through three or four blockers and everybody else kind of standing around. And that just didn't work. And I think Elway put them on the hot seat in the off season. He called out the defense very early in the off season, February even. So, he went public with those guys got to play better and we're going to add people. And they were fully ready to trade down in the draft. And then, Cleveland took Denzel Ward at number 4 and that left them Bradley Chubb and they quickly scuttled the trade to add Chubb because they thought he could have the kind of impact, on their defense that they needed.
How are they going to sort that out with Shane Ray and with Chubb?
Well, they've sorted it out by saying Chubb's the guy and Shane's going to have to live with, they have what they call their NASCAR package when they put all the rushers on the field. So I think that's going to be Shane's main role because Chubb, It was quick and it was obvious, but Chubb earned that spot right away in the off season, and you knew he wasn't going anywhere. So, and then when they did not engage Shane Ray's fifth year option. They worried about the wrist injury. He had 3 surgeries on it last year. He was supposed to have a 4th in the off season, and he elected not to. He's kind of rolling the dice that he can play his way into a contract and that the wrist will stay okay. So I think they're sort of banking on Ray playing for his next contract and having a good year for them in kind of a situational role.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot of question whether he was going to be able to be there for the start of the season, and he was. I think he probably was ahead of schedule and all that, but how healthy is he?
He's looked okay, but again, they haven't, they've limited him in terms of contact quite a bit, but he was going to Houston to have the forced surgery. And when he got there is when they decided not to do it. So, you know, there's a little bit of risk there for him, but I'm sure he sees it. You know, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season, and I'm sure he wants to take advantage of whatever snaps he can get. And if they can get the lead, they will rush the passer. They will be among the sack leaders if they can play with the lead at all this year.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about Case Keenum?
I like his accuracy, John. I mean, he's been in frame in camp a lot, and to me, that's been what's missing. They've had guys who could run the offense. I thought Trevor Siemian's a better prospect than people give him credit for, but they couldn't protect him, and then his mechanics eroded. But I think Case has been through a lot in his career, so he's kind of mentally tough, and he puts the ball where it needs to go, and I think their catch-and-run numbers will be a lot better than they were last year. And that's the one thing the receivers kept talking about all offseason, that he knows where to put the ball, and he gets them out of trouble, and he kind of throws them open at times. And they haven't had that since Peyton, before Peyton's foot injury slowed him down.
That's encouraging. I know the offensive line has been kind of rebuilt. It's been rebuilt and rebuilt. How's this version of the rebuild?
Yeah, it's the annual project here, I call it. I mean, they're okay if nobody gets hurt. And, boy, that's a tall order in the league these days if you're banking on that. But if Ron Leary at guard and Jared Veldier at tackle can stay on the field, it's a good group. If they have to dip into the backups, then I think they're going to have some issues and they would have to adjust on offense. They'd have to be a lot more two tight end, a lot more bulky formations if anybody gets hurt. But if that group stays substantially healthy, they should be better than last season. But it was a struggle last season, and if they had to do that again, it would sort of limit, you know, these improvements they think they've made.
Is there going to be a little drop off in the secondary without Aqib Talib, or where do they stand in the secondary?
Well, you know, that's all on Roby, Bradley Roby. If you know, and they've admitted, you know, that consistency is what he's going to have to transition to, because for him it was easy to come in the game because Chris Harris was a Pro Bowler, Aqib Talib was a Pro Bowler. If you're the third guy, you can take chances. You know, you can go for the interceptions. You can go for the big plays. He can't do that all the time now. You know, now he's got to play it by the numbers. You know, he's got to be reliable. And Chris Harris has even said it. He said the difference will be when you go from 600 plays to 1,000 plays, what did you do with those other 400 plays? Were you reliable? Did you, you know, make the right read? Did you make the right call? Because you can't just be gambling all the time, and that will be the transition for him. And that'll kind of determine, you know, can they move on past Talib or not?
Because, I mean, he was such a good player. I know age did not seem to, you know, affect him. But, again, I mean, you can see that, you know, you can't keep every salary. At some point, somebody's got to go. And they'll appreciate that in the Rams in the next couple of years.
Exactly. And honestly, John, I think Aqib was one of those guys that really got frustrated with the losing last year. And I think he was just ready for a change. I think he was resisting a little bit the new scheme. You know, they were playing a lot of Wade stuff, but not everything. And those guys, I mean, you know how it is when a group does as well as they did in 2015 and win the Super Bowl, you know, you start thinking that's the way you should do it all the time. So if anybody tries to change that, some of those guys dig their heels in a little bit because they're like looking at Super Bowl rings saying, why are you changing this? This is what we did when we did it our way. And I think Aqib got caught up in that a little bit, and that was at least part of the reason they made the deal.
I can't imagine Aqib Talib being hard-headed about something. That's stunning.
I mean, they were number one in everything in 2015. I mean, you've seen that with the group up there. When
oh, yeah.
when you when you win the ultimate prize doing it the way you want to do it, it's hard to let that go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree 100%. And that's the thing I liked about that defense. Because, again, you know, same type of alpha males that Seattle had. I just felt so comfortable in that group just kind of going around.
Yeah, I think when defense leads your team, it's a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more about moving forward and taking charge. And I think sometimes, you know, offenses can be more calculated and all of that. I think just teams led by defense have a different sort of swagger to them.
No, agreed. Jeff Legwald, read him on ESPN.com. Always great talking to you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you bright and early tomorrow.
I am looking forward to seeing you, John. Safe travels.
Okay, thanks. That's Jeff Legwald. Of course, we are taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Woody. Hey, Woody, how are you?
Hey, great, Mr. Clayton. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hey, we have a couple questions for you. My son and I are on the way down to the Husky game and also possibly the Husky game for a double dip of sports action. The first question is, if you were the upper management of the Mariners, what would you do with the fish for cut bait scenario with your veterans aren't performing and, you know, fixing some of the problems in the offense and also, you know, finding some solid starting pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as he does all the time, he's got to start looking around for trades. I mean, that's, I think, you know, it's got to be one of the things to see which fits, which doesn't fit, all those different things. And, you know, because now I guess the shift in this offseason, because, again, the one thing they have is they picked up all these players that are real good for the, you know, the ability to come back and, you know, get the, you know, the come back and be under contract for so long. But they've got to find a way to mix and match. And so, you know, a couple guys, you got to decide, okay, what happens to Kyle Seager? You know, what happens to, you know, Ryan Healy? You know, those type of guys. I mean, I think they're okay with D. Gordon, but they've got to find a way to get better hitters. I mean, because, again, I think that's the disappointing thing, because everybody thought this season was going to be one where it's like, okay, they're going to be real fine in that category, real good in being able to, you know, get hitting. Because most people thought they were going to, you know, play a season where it was going to be much more of a high-scoring type of a team, and it's not. And so they've got a way to get hitting. But, of course, that's easier to acquire than the other way. So it's harder to get pitching, but then they still got to get more pitching. So it's going to be a tough task. But, you know, the one thing is, I think it's pretty safe to say that Jerry DePoto is not going to break this thing up, and nor should he.
True. How about Felix and Nelly?
Well, I mean, you know, you almost have no – I hope they would get Nelson Cruz back because, again, it's like you don't want to lose that type of hitting. That's something so important. So it's like find a way to make that work. And then, you know, as far as Felix, I mean, there's not much you can do. He's making $27 million, and, you know, that's not going to change. You know, that's one that, you know, you just have to kind of absorb it and see where it stands. And, you know, because you're not going to be able to get any kind of a trade unless you, you know, basically give him up. And you'd have to pay a lot of money to the other team to give him up.
Yep, he's been a superstar for a lot of years. It's just, I think his arm's just a little used.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but I think that's true.
Okay. Second question on my son has on the defensive side of the ball for the Hawks.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John.
Yes.
What do you think? How many sacks do you think Rasheem Green and Frank Clark are going to have for the Seahawks this year?
I think, you know, you can maybe have the expectation of maybe six, somewhere in that category. Six sacks. You know, I still think they're going to be a 39-40 sack team, because what they may not get initially with the pass rush and the defensive line, I think they're going to get in blitzing. And they need to get to 39 or 40 because, you know, they got to start creating turnovers. That's the one thing that, you know, kind of a little scary about the preseason. You didn't see the turnovers. And, again, that's not a big thing because, again, it's preseason. So it's not like it's all you worry about that. But that's something they've got to try to find a way to get. Hey, thank you all for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tyler in Fife. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, John. How's it going, buddy?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Just driving, working.
Yep. There you go.
So buddy, I think the one key thing everybody always forgets, and I know that all Seattle wanted to do was get rid of Daryl Bevel and try up a new scheme because, you know, you see with Sarkisian down in Atlanta, I don't think things are really clicking down there.
No, I think it's safe to say that.
You know, so, and there's another thing that I think the prime matchup would be a Fetty against, you know, Von Miller, and whether or not how the tight ends and the running backs will do. That's the key, I think, to winning the game is making sure, you know, they're 8th, 3rd, and 17s and all of them. And then my last question would be Vance Joseph. If he gets blown out by 20 must points this game, do you think he's secretly going to be fired?
Not after one game. Nobody fires anybody after one game. But, you know, I think that you're looking at is like, you know, that could be a mid-season, late-season type of firing if things don't work out. And so there's a lot of pressure on Vance Joseph. He had to make a lot of changes in his coaching staff just to satisfy John Elway. So, yeah, that's going to be out there. But, you know, I think that, you know, it's one where the Broncos, you know, they underachieved last year. And when you underachieve and you're a young coach and all that, I mean, you may have to eventually pay the price. Ideally, you'd like to say, give the guy 3-4 years to see how he can do, but there's no patience like that now in the National Football League.
Absolutely. What do you think about the Effetti-Von Miller matchup?
Well, let's put it this way. What I think about the Effetti-Von Miller matchup is that Will Disley or Nick Vanette is going to be by his side. I think, you know, if you're going to, you almost have to try to go a little bit more too tight end because that's too much edge pass rush. I mean, they're going to be fine on the left side. They're shaky on the right side. And to fix shaky on the right side, probably the best thing to do is have a tight end right next to him.
And do you think that everybody's going to be talking about a win if Von Miller gets no sacks? Because they would be like, man, Effetti and all that. That's what I think, you know. Because
the conversation yesterday was if they would hold a team to 3 or less sacks, then, you know, they should have a better chance of winning.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I think that's the matchup because defense, Pete Carroll is a scheme guy. We see if it's 14-0, they come out the next half and no team score points and stuff. I mean, Pete Carroll's almost made it, you know, to the point where you get the 6-foot corners and
right.
He's made like this, you know. So I'm not really, the defense is fine with me. It's always been fine. And they worked Sherman and stuff. People just have to be patient with that. Mm-hmm. And it was the offensive line. It was the time for Russell Wilson. And I'm seeing the offensive coordinator. What kind of schemes, what kind of, you know, how, quick throws and all that, you know, just scheme plays.
Right.
And I hope it works, you know, because I don't see it in Atlanta, and I just feel bad down there because I like Sark.
Yeah, I like Sark,
I thought he changed up.
I just don't get good vibes of how that thing's, you know, I'm not saying going to end, but where it's going to go because, you know, the patience is going to start wearing because, you know, Matt Ryan did not look comfortable whatsoever, and they just looked bad. So,
Yeah,
12 points, I mean, with an offense that should score 25 to 28, that's just not good.
Absolutely. Thank you, John, for your time.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421, ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710, ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421, ESPN. Let's go to Jack in Georgetown. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Professor. How's it going?
Doing good.
So you touched a little bit about what I wanted to ask, but I wanted to ask your take on Sarkisian this year and whether or not he's on a hot seat because Falcons offense looked dreadful. It didn't look like anything changed from last year.
Yeah. No, he's definitely on the hot seat. I mean, he was on the hot seat coming into the season. He's on the hot seat overall. No, there's no question that he's on the hot seat.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And if it doesn't work out for him in Atlanta, does he even have a job next year?
I think he can get back into college.
Okay,
you know, maybe as an assistant, and then maybe, you know, maybe not get a head coaching job, but I think he can get back in. And again, I hope he does well because I really like him. I think he's, you know, certainly I think that he's, you know, beaten down those demons that he's had. I mean, I like the guy a lot, but unfortunately right now it's just not working.
Yeah, but he inherited, at the time, the number one offense in the NFL.
Agreed.
The reigning MVP, and they just don't look as good.
No, they look bad. I mean,
and it's not like they lost any players. They still have everyone from 2 years ago for the most part.
Right.
I mean, you got one of the best receivers in the game. You got two good running backs, and you have an MVP in Matt Ryan. Mm-hmm. I don't get why the offense doesn't look as good as it did 2 years ago.
I think so much of it has to be the play calling. I mean, the one thing that he's not been able to get that Kyle Shanahan was able to get was the running game going. I mean, he's got two great backs. He's got a good offensive line, and it just isn't clicking whatsoever. And, you know, he's paying the price for that. And then the stuff in the red zone, again, that's another byproduct of not being able to successfully run the football. And they've got to find a way to conquer that because it looks bad. And, you know, they're not going to go more than this year if this is going to continue. And, you know, there's no question if things start to fall apart in this tough NFC, I could see a change. Now, the problem is, who do they change to and who do they go to? But right now, it looks bad. I agree.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, I got to see the ending of that game last year, and it looked like a mirror image of how the divisional game between those two teams ended last year, back in January. Like, no. You know, same ending. They tried to throw it to Julio, couldn't come down with it in the end zone.
Right. Yeah, and again, it's like, what are they now, one out of their last 20 in the red zone? That's not good.
Yeah, because that was, I mean, I know everyone, including you, thought that, you know, Atlanta should have won that game.
Right.
Like, yeah. But anyway, thanks, Professor.
All right, hey, thank you very much. No, you can see there's a lot of things brewing there. Let's go to Wheat in Tacoma. Hey, Wheat.
Yeah, hey, what's going on, John? It's been a little while here.
Yes.
I was at the Seahawks Fan Fest here on Ocean Shores, and I was at the Raiders preseason game.
Nice.
Like, that's what I've been doing, kind of hanging out with the 12s and doing all that kind of fun stuff. And then, of course, I watched that UW game, and I don't know what to think. Sometimes get mad, get happy in between, get frustrated. I don't know what to think about UW football right now, John. I really don't. I'm mad alive. Where do I?
No, hey, it was a close game. It was a tough game. You can see that they lost, maybe didn't lose a lot of stature as far as some of the rankings and all that. I mean, what, dropping 6-9 or? I mean, I think they're going to be fine. I think that you saw better performances. You know, the defense still looks good, but they've just got to find a way to get some better stuff going on the offensive side, and they need to get, you know, in the bigger games, they need more out of their starting quarterback Jake Browning.
Oh man, alive, man. I can't even remember who said it on what radio or TV or whatever, man. In those big games against USC, Alabama, Auburn, I can't remember if there's like a fourth game. Mm-hmm. All these big games that UW has played in the past few years with him, and it's like, oh man, gosh, just hey man, expectations, man. You know, you get real, man. We expect a lot more. And I guess I didn't see it. When you expect a lot more, you kind of get a little let down when you lose, John. You know,
right.
you do. You kind of, I mean, for me with the Seahawks last year, I didn't expect too much, man. So I wasn't let down with what I saw, you know, and I really wasn't. When we got waxed by the Rams there, what, 55-2 or whatever the score was, and everyone left and all that stuff, you know, and I kind of didn't expect too much. But at any rate, it's a new day here, and what almost what 24 hours, John, in the spirit of the 12th. You know, I'll take the Seahawks at 1:30 tomorrow, John. Not because that's my team, because you know, I saw no running game with anything Thursday night from anybody.
Right?
Can anyone run the ball? Can anyone run the ball 5 yards? I didn't see any running backs anywhere do anything Thursday night, so I'm thinking, wow, man.
But remember, I mean, it's your backups and all that stuff. I don't go overboard on a game like that. I don't.
Well,
it's preseason.
Okay. You don't have to, but I'm gonna. You be you. I'm gonna be me.
Okay.
What I saw, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, man, because I don't know what our running backs are looking like, but I'm thinking with the slew we got, I'm liking our situation, John.
I do too. I think they're going to be very successful running the ball this year.
Okay, John. It's nice talking to you. Have a nice day.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here. Let's go to Jose in Renton. Hey, Jose.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for calling.
Sorry if you already covered this, but I haven't been able to listen. Coaching a little football today.
Oh, okay.
Is Errol going to be able to play tomorrow? And is KJ coming back soon? Or what do you know about
that? Yeah, KJ's probably going to be maybe a couple weeks. And who was the first game that you mentioned?
Earl Thomas, is he going to be?
I think he is, yeah, because they released Simeon Thomas, the one cornerback that they picked up from the Cleveland Browns, and you know they brought Akeem King up. You know, they put Dante Johnson on the injured reserve list, and so what I can see happening is that there's going to be one open spot right now for Earl Thomas. Now the question is going to be, you know, and it looks like he'll pass that test and be on the active roster. Now the second thing is, you know, are they going to go ahead and you know, have Earl play a lot? And you kind of get the idea maybe they will, particularly they're going to be so young at the cornerback position, because now you got Shaquille Griffin in his second year. You may have Trey Flowers out there starting, and so that's a lot to ask. And so, you know, I kind of get the feeling that maybe, just maybe, they're going to go ahead and get Earl and maybe see if they can start him, you know. But the big thing is, it looks like he is going to be out there and trying to play.
Gotcha. Hey, and Le'Veon, is he back now?
No.
I haven't heard the last day or
two. Nope, he's not there. Very, very, very silly. I mean, dumb. Don't understand it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Sean in Newcastle. Hey, Sean.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. How is Mrs. Clinton doing?
Okay. She had a very tough week, but she's getting better.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, again, once again, thank you so much for doing this. So, I have a question about us conditioning. I was listening to Brock yesterday, and he was talking about no matter how much you run, sprint, lift, you do not get the conditioning which you get in a preseason game. What do you think about that?
I agree. I mean, because again, there's three speeds. I mean, you have your speed in the OTAs and the mini camp. You have the speed once you're in the you know, the regular season or the preseason, and then it really steps up starting when you go tomorrow in that. So it's a big adjustment and a big change.
Right. So we might not see a lot of him maybe in the second half, or maybe it's just going to be in practice.
Who's that? Are you talking about Earl Thomas or?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, hard to tell. I mean, I think it's a lot to ask for somebody that hasn't had a training camp to go out there and play, you know, 60 minutes. But I think it may be just to start the game or whatever. Because, again, you know, knowing that Dante Johnson now goes on the injured reserve list and Trey Flowers is a possibility to start, you've got, you know, a second-year, first-year cornerback. And so leadership is going to be so important.
Absolutely. So, John, this has been a question that has been bugging me for a little while now. Mm-hmm. I'm just not clear about what does national media think about Seahawks. We were given that we're going to win 4 out of 12 games, and then we were given a B- in the draft, and then I was looking at the predictions. It says 28-14 Broncos. I mean, what are these guys thinking and doing? I mean, how are they? They're like absolutely wrong all the time. How does it work?
I think sometimes, and that's why you can, if you don't study it, you can look real bad in predictions, because, you know, this team's still better than 4-12, obviously. And the reason is they've got a quarterback, and a quarterback makes such a big difference. You can't not say that. That's one thing that's the reality. Quarterbacks make things right. It's a quarterback driven league. And, you know, Russell Wilson's one of the top 5 quarterbacks in football. And normally top 5 quarterbacks don't lose more than 8 games. Simple as that.
Yeah, I agree. So you think that, I mean, like, I've seen draft picks, like Mike Mayock saying that this guy would be picked first, and he absolutely picked up second. So I just do not get the narrative which has been there. It doesn't make me sad, but it just is, like, annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these guys are just do not know. Is it fair to say do not know what they're talking about?
Well, I mean, no, or they're just wrong. I mean, they may know what they're talking about, but, you know, not every prediction is going to be right.
Absolutely. My prediction is going to be, it's like 10-6 or 9-7, and we make the playoffs.
Yeah, see, I think 9 wins. I don't know, but that may not fit into the equation for the wild card. We'll see, because again, I think that there's so many good quarterbacks in the NFC that's going to be a challenge for everybody, and it's going to pull the win totals down for everybody. But I still think
I heard you on Bob Gruss and Tom, and I think Bob was saying the fact that 538 predicts us to win the 39% chances of winning the division and 36% to Rams. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Again, I just stay with 8-9 wins. I mean, that's what I stay with. And then we'll see. If the better they run the football, the better chance they have to maybe get to 10 wins. Is this a Super Bowl team? No, I don't think it is. But it's, I think, a team that's better than people think.
Are you headed to Denver?
Yes, tomorrow morning.
Oh, perfect. That would be great. Well, good luck, and thanks again for everything. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
I'm doing great, John Clayton, because it's great to be on the John Clayton Show on the first Saturday of September during the first football weekend of the year when all the games count. And right off the bat, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to one of my all-time favorite people, not only one of the great voices of Seattle sports, but one of the great voices, period, and undoubtedly the greatest laugh this side of the Mississippi. A man who was a legend in his own mind, I mean time. Mm-hmm. It was really good to hear the one and only the Groz, Dave Groz, be back on the air, back on the John Clayton Show, back on 710 Cairo. Long live the Groz. You know what I'm saying, John.
Oh, isn't that great? Now, that's the highlight of the month for me, and I think for a lot of people. It's great to have him back.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just great to have him back and great to have him healthy.
Yes, exactly. I completely agree. I want to give a shout-out to John Clayton. Let me give one to the Sports Bar Network with members like Fitzgerald and Ballard helping the official Sports Fan Union keep the pedal to the metal on Seattle hosting a Super Bowl. Now, Fitzgerald's a cougar bar, but right across Ballard is the Barking Dog Ale House where you can bring your dog to watch the dog. There'll probably be more barking there than at Husky Stadium today. And before I get to the Husky, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to one of the great football characters of all time, Paul Wrecking Crew of the Mean Machine, and a shout-out to the memory and legacy of Burt Reynolds. Rest in peace. You know, some guys are stars. Some guys are movie stars. Some guys are superstars, but only one guy was Burt Reynolds. Did you ever meet the Bandit, John?
I never did, but you know, I know I would have came out of it well because Terry Bradshaw would put in a good word for me because I mean he was on there. But what a guy that was! He was so much fun to watch, and you can see he had so much fun doing these movies.
Exactly, you're right about that. And moving to the docks, John Clayton. Today we'll once again confirm there is no better place to be on a sunny Saturday afternoon than on the shores of Lake Washington on Montlake in Husky Stadium with 72,000 Husky fans going crazy as the dogs run out of the tunnel. Since, as far as I'm concerned, football in this town starts and ends with the Huskies, since long before the Seahawks were even a glimmer in John Nordstrom's investment banker's eye, the Huskies were playing football. But for this Husky team, this season, on the road, last week, in the SEC, in the Dirty South, home of the Dirty Birds, was the absolute perfect way for the 2018 Washington Huskies to start things off. And although they let the game slip away by not making plays at some of the most opportune times, the Huskies, they look like they are going to be hard to handle in the Pac-12 this season. The defense looked good. The secondary had some letdowns, but they look like they're going to have a lot of picks this season. And speaking of picks, Jake Browning's first of the year not only made me nervous last week, but he's got me concerned for the rest of the season since, you know, he now has a habit of throwing picks at the absolute worst time in games that you just can't throw a pick. So let's hope today against the Fighting Hawks he throws zero. Moving to the Seahawks right quick, John Clayton, we've heard a lot of trash talking the past couple of days. And say what you will about this guy talking or that guy talking. As far as I'm concerned, it's pretty well documented that no one has talked more trash with more consistently, with more of a natural flow than Victor from Auburn, a.k.a. the mailman, a.k.a. the biggest Denver Broncos fan on the John Clayton Show. He lives in Auburn, but he talks like the Broncos beating the Seahawks. Victor sounds like he's mile high. And, you know, I don't mean the stadium. When Victor in Auburn, says he's going to, it's going to be easy for the Broncos to win. It's hard to tell if he's doing a John Denver impersonation or drinking too much Coors Light. Read between the lines, John Clayton. When Victor in Auburn says to you, another great show, he really means, help me, John Clayton. You're my only hope. But all jokes aside, now that week one is here, like other Seahawks fans, I can't wait to see how the 2018 Hawks look. Like one of my favorite John Clayton show callers, Rashid, said earlier, I'm looking for the turnaround from the Hawks team that which is no longer, which is why I'm calling this as the proof of the in the pudding season. When Coach Carroll and John Snyder got to town, they were doing deals like Edward Scissorhands. They were cutting up on contracts almost as soon as they were signed. Slowly but surely, they built a championship team out of a bunch of rookies that became Pro Bowlers and future Hall of Famers. And as DeGraw mentioned earlier, this season will tell the tale of whether they can do it again. And all I can say is that the proof is in the pudding since we saw a Super Bowl team twice. And tomorrow, the first 16th of the tale will be told in Denver against their old AFC rival when the Seahawks smoked the Broncos like an Auburn blunt.
Go well, tell you what, let's go to, like, we'll do that. Commando, thank you. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Help me, John Clayton. You're my only help.
I know about that.
Yeah, Commando's always great with entertainment. John, how much will Harris be on Baldwin tomorrow?
I think a bunch. I mean, because, again, I mean, he's one of the best slot guys in the league, and certainly Chris is one of the best slot cornerbacks, and so I imagine he's going to be on him almost the whole game. I don't know if he's just going to exclusively cover him. And, you know, at different times, I think they'll move Baldwin to the outside and try to get some spacing and all that. But there's no doubt that he's going to be out there trying to cover because that's Chris Harris is one of the best.
Okay, what do you think the Broncos' key is to winning that game? Where do they need attack on offense?
They need to run the ball. I mean, they need to run the ball and not make turnovers. They got to make sure that they, you know, get really good performance out of Case Keenum, you know, make drives work and all that stuff, and then, you know, try to get a couple turnovers. I mean, sacks are going to be important. If they get more than three sacks, they have a great chance to win. This is going to be a good test. I mean, both teams go in with a lot of questions. We'll see who comes out with the answers. Victor, thank you. And again, I'll be back tomorrow, or I'll be back Monday at 10 o'clock. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.